one of my favorites.
Dear sir, madam, will you read my demand? Here are all the meds, so you'll understand. You've got 30 days and not a minute more. Hope you blow this chance, cause I wanna be a policy opener. Policy opener.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Justice Team Podcast. I am your host for this episode, Brandon Simon. And today we're talking about one of my favorite topics, mediation. We're talking about all things mediation, so negotiations, some techniques, how do you handle your client. But first, we will have Murat John Abahan tell us what he's made for us.
Let's see. Today we crafted a special Orange County-specific Paloma cocktail. We've got a little bit of tequila, some lime juice.
Yeah, you do.
A little bit of tequila, I repeat. Some lime juice, a little agave, some grapefruit.
What makes this Orange County specific?
Because we're having it in Orange County.
Okay.
Durr.
All right. So we have an all Justice Team podcast panel today. No special guests.
This is Ryan's kind of special.
Yeah, he's special.
He's
tall.
In many ways.
I actually just sat in 3 hours of traffic to get here, and this is my first meal of the day, so
<You've> got,
things might get a little loopy.
You've got some agave for vitamins and minerals in there. You've got some grapefruit to stave off the scurvy. You're good.
You might find out what I really think of mediation.
So to my right, we got Sevi Fisher. Say hello, Sevi Fisher.
Hello, everyone.
We got Ryan Conger to my left.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
My brother Brad Simon to his left.
Hi.
And Jenny Anglin to his left.
What's up?
And if you're watching on YouTube, Jenny's wearing some strange footwear.
Those are her actual feet.
Is there a story behind that? Or
I think you're the one who first told me about the foot problems we've been having.
Yeah, we've got some foot fetish people who watch our videos. So Jenny's trying to protect. I think it's going to make it worse, to be honest with you.
We'll it's going to exacerbate.
You just invited the whole furry community into this world.
I'm just protecting myself. I don't want anybody seeing my feet anymore in their natural state. Okay. So
make sure you don't just throw grease on that fire, right?
Make sure you don't pop the heel or anything. Yeah.
Like that?
Yeah. Okay. So we got a lot of stuff to cover. First and foremost, why do we even need to mediate? I got a good case. Like, who cares? Why do we need to mediate, Ryan?
Well, I think it's always better for the client if you can get full value without putting them through the paces of a trial, without spending the money to go to trial. It usually puts more money in the client's pocket if you can get a good resolution.
Yeah, so, I mean, litigations ain't cheap, right?
Exactly right.
And trial ain't cheap either.
Exactly.
So
right.
For someone who says, you know, I'm a trial attorney, I don't need to mediate.
What do you think? Our average trial probably is $100,000 in costs just for something that's a soft tissue. And if there's any liability dispute and you have a biomechanist and an accident reconstruction expert, and then you have the medical doctors, that's quickly getting up to $200,000 to get to go through trial to do a case.
To do it right.
To do it right, yeah, you're only as good as your experts and your trial attorney, but you get what you pay for. So a lot of times, Ryan said, you can try to get full value mediation, but sometimes it's almost better for the client to get 80% of value, and you're not spending $200,000 to go through trial to get a little bit better result when it really nets the client less in their pocket. And that's what we really care about. We don't care about the dollar figure we resolve the case for. What the client really cares about is what they get at the end of the day.
Not always. Sometimes you have clients that want nothing less than $2 million they're going
to
pay.
Take it to the mat.
What does that mean to you? What?
Take it to the mat.
What about you, Mr. Trial Attorney? How do you feel about mediations?
I think it's a good thing.
He doesn't.
Not a big fan.
I've been in mediations with him. He just sits stone-faced the whole time.
No, it's a good tool to. I like to go learn things about the other side, but yeah, I could do with it with or without them.
So we'll start from the outset. I mean, what is the importance of selecting the right mediator? You know, Jenny, is there specific mediators that are good for certain things, certain carriers? I mean, how much thought goes into it? Because you're attending mediation like what, 2-3 times a month, maybe?
Yeah, usually.
So, I mean, what goes into your thought process when you're throwing mediator names out there?
I mean, I have my list of favorites, and you know, sometimes there are people I just really like, but usually they're people who I really like and who I know can actually get the case resolved. But there are different mediators that are going to be better for certain cases. And you get to know after, you know, several with each mediator, okay, well, I shouldn't go to mediation with this mediator in this case because this one dumps all over my meds every time I go to this mediator. So I'm going to have to steer clear of this mediator on this case because he or she particularly does not like this set of treaters or this doctor or whatever. And you get to know that after you go to a bunch of mediations. But, I mean, it's really important because they're going to be leaning on, you know, different people, maybe your client, maybe the other side, and you have to trust them. So it's a, probably, it's a very important decision.
I like letting the defense attorneys
throw
pick
some names out there.
Yeah. Who's their adjuster most comfortable with? I think that's always a great tactic because, you know, rather than just say, oh, I've got my mediator, that's who I'm sticking with. The adjuster might on the other side might not respect your mediator or like your mediator, and I think they'll, you know, more a tendency to listen more if they choose them.
Certain mediators definitely have relationships with certain carriers and are liked by certain carriers, and I'd always rather be with the mediator that that carrier trusts.
Right.
Because then if you can win over the mediator, then you can probably settle the case. Once in a while, we'll be in the process of selecting mediators, and I'll hear defense counsel say something like, well, I guess if you love that guy, then we'll use him. And I'm like, no, then he's out. I don't want to use him anymore. I don't want to be there with you guys thinking that, you know, he's on my side.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's probably, you know, a handful of mediators in our industry that we all can agree are probably on the upper echelon. But does that mean that that mediator might not be good for certain cases? I mean, there are probably some that are better for disputed liability cases.
I pick
or
mediators,
TBI cases. Or
I usually pick the mediators based on who's going to get this done in the fastest amount of time because mediation usually drives me crazy. Because really, like most cases, and you have a good defense attorney on the other side, everyone knows where the case, the range of value for that case. And it takes so long to get there. And some adjusters just love the dance, and they want to start super low.
Some adjusters and some attorneys in this room love the dance.
But half day mediations are great.
I can't go like more than 4 hours. It's like, why? Yeah. What are we talking about for 4 hours? At mediation, we all know the facts of this case. So some mediators out there who I love, I know just love to talk. And it's kind of like, I know at the end of the day, we're going to get a great result. But I can't be here until 8 p.m. when the lights and the air conditioning get shut down. Like, Jenny was there. I'm pretty calm. I was yelling in a mediator's face. I was like, what are we doing? Like, you're in that other room for 4 hours? Like, what are you doing?
It was violent.
You can only eat so many peanut M&Ms.
Yeah. Oh, I eat a lot of those. You know, at certain facilities, there's the peanut M&Ms, and it says, this contains peanuts. And then there's a jar right next to it of peanuts, and it says, this contains nuts. Like, warning. Like, it's clear. I can see what's inside.
Yeah.
It's probably because some guy like Sevi made a stink about peanut allergy. And, like, you didn't warn me. A failure to warn. And now guys like you keeping people safe.
I am not allergic to peanuts.
Oh, I said peanut.
Wait, been. What was that word?
moving on.
I think there are certain cases that where a retired judge is great because he's got a certain je ne sais quoi or stature that works for...
That means I don't know in French.
Works for the other side, works for your client.
Yeah, there's some clients that are you need specific types of mediators for.
But then there's other cases, I think, when you have a lot of parties and you have indemnity and insurance issues and coverage issues running in both directions, that you need somebody who's more of a wheeler dealer. And I think there's only a couple of those guys out there that I trust on those cases. They understand the business side of it.
But
a lot of it is business. Like, you kind of need to know certain pressure points. And, you know, a client asks us, what's my case worth? I mean, that's a huge variable. But the biggest variable is how much insurance coverage is there? Is there an excess above that? Is it the same carrier? Is it a different carrier? There's a lot that goes into that equation. And the mediator also, like Ryan says, there's certain mediators that know a lot about bad faith and insurance coverage and which adjusters put pressures on others. That all goes into the...
Yeah, we'll get into some negotiation tactics, but I want to kind of focus a little bit more right now on the things you're doing leading up to mediation. So, you know, you're selecting your mediator, usually... You know, at least a month out most of the time, a couple months out. You know, what other things are you doing and leading up to mediation, because I didn't know until a couple of years into practice that, for instance, Ryan, that you need to make sure that you have everything that the other side needs. You need to get it to them before a certain amount of time, for example.
Yeah, we on the plaintiff's side, we can meet our client at Denny's 45 minutes before the case, before the mediation, and decide,
or at mediation.
Yeah, or at mediation and decide what our evaluation of the case is and what our bottom line is. I'm half kidding. We should know before that. But, you know, we can turn on a dime. Carriers can't. Usually when they whoever shows up at that mediation, there's a ceiling on what they have that day, and that's probably been set weeks before. And that process has been put in place 60, 90 days before, Jenny, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. But I think like the final, they do like usually a round table or something, and you would usually get your authority about, you know, at least 10 days before the mediation in most cases.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, too, with respect to specials, economic damages. I call the other side and say, we have plenty to argue about. Let's at least make sure that we both have the same number for specials, you know, a couple of weeks before the mediation. I think that's a big deal.
Yeah, because you could show up and they're missing, like, the surgeon's bill. And that's something like, oh, we didn't know that. And it's like, well, if you just called me up and make sure we're working with the same universe of
right. Let's knock out the easy stuff. You know, okay, you may be disputing liability for purposes of trial, but you're not going to dispute liability at this mediation, are you? Okay, cool. Box checked. Okay, I've got, you know, $377,000 in economic damage or in past medical bills. You've got $368,000. Okay, cool. We're on the same page. Yeah. But if you've got $120,000, we got a problem. Let's start that out today, not at the mediation.
So how before when you're leading up to mediation, you know, it's your case, you're litigating it. I mean, all of us here, Jenny, you run your own cases. I run my own cases. Ryan, you run your own cases. How involved are you with the defense attorney leading up to mediation? Are you kind of, you know, working with them to say, hey, you give me what you need. We need to make sure we have all of our ducks in a row. What's your relationship with the defense attorney going into mediation, and how important is it to make sure that you're kind of, you're on opposite sides, but you're kind of steering towards the same sort of...
I think that's a big deal. I think that's probably one of the things that I take the most pride in what I do is I communicate with the defense side, and I feel like, with the exception of a few defense attorneys that are really difficult, most of the time we can sort of do the case on two tracks. There's like the trial track and the settlement track, and we can switch hats and have a reasonable conversation about settlement, knowing that there's other issues that are going to be disputed if the case goes to trial. So I really try to communicate the whole way through and make sure that he understands my theory of the case and what my damages are.
Yeah, I mean, how often, Jenny, I mean, how often have you gone into a mediation not knowing, not having any idea of what to expect? I mean, you usually have some idea of where it's going to go, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's why what Ryan was saying is so important, too. I mean, you're not doing your client any favors if you show up at mediation with, like, a surprise number that isn't justified by what's already been kind of exchanged in discovery. So in answer to your question, I mean, I do reach out to defense. I'm like, look, let's make sure that we know going into this that we can have a meaningful mediation, you know? You have all the bills you need. I saw you guys send out subpoenas. Is there anything you're missing? Let me help you get it, because I don't want to play games.
Yeah, I've had instances. I mean, if it's a defense attorney that I've worked with before and I trust, so, you know, I will pull them aside and say, hey, look, it's your carrier. You know kind of how to get the money from them. So why don't you give me an idea of where I should start or what kind of pressure points to push? You need to have a very kind of good understanding of that person and a good trust in that person to do that. But I mean, if you can find a defense attorney that you've worked with for many years and work that angle, sometimes that works as well.
I'm a big fan of that. I think that's a fantastic idea, because your demand a lot of times is just a starting point. You're sort of stabbing in the dark, whereas the defense attorney knows his carrier. I think that's great.
Brad, what are a handful of things, or just a couple things, that you better make sure that you know As the attorney handling that case that's going to that mediation, that you know before you get there? You need to know.
Usually, like, my client's name.
Yeah, that's a good one. Say, hey you. What they look like,
which
maybe.
Which one's my client? I usually ask the receptionist when I get to the...
Okay. I'll accept that.
I usually, you know, you got to make sure, like, where your clients, you know, if they're injured, where their treatment is. Like, are they still treating? Are they kind of in a good spot right now, or is there a surgery coming up? Definitely know your, like Ryan was talking about, the medical specials or your economic losses. Is there a loss of earning claim in there? Are they missing money at work? Are they back to work? Are they still off work? Because when you go to mediation, like any, like if you resolve any case, it's done. You can't come back and be like, hey, my client, now he's getting a cervical fusion. Well, let's make sure that's baked in. But you got to know the insurance limits and kind of the last offer and demand, because our firm gets referred in a lot of cases for trial and litigation. And one of the worst things that happens is we go to mediation and we make a demand, and then they say, wait a minute, the last demand by prior counsel was half that. And then you're like, oh man, like we need to know these things and make sure you know that going in so you don't. Because one of the worst things that happens to go to mediation is the defense goes backwards in their offer and we go backwards in our demand. Like we go up from the last demand, and that just, that's a non-starter.
Sev, what's one thing you really got to know before you, how?
I want to know my costs and what there I'm going to net my client.
Yeah,
I think the costs are important. You know, and what you know, obviously, all that's the treatment's really important. Where they're at, where their you know wages and all that are. But yeah, I think that's most important. All your client wants to know. They don't care about all the you know medical bills.
I mean, $1 million settlement with you know $200,000 in costs is a lot different than a $700,000 settlement with $2,000 in costs.
Right.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, I do.
Costs and meds, I think.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean. We always do a full printout of our costs, where they're at that point in time. Obviously, if you're an expert discovery, you got to tack on, you know, another estimate because there's some invoices out there for court reporter, videographer, other work the expert does.
Another big thing we sometimes overlook is, did the client take out any litigation loans? Because we might not know that, and the client knows that, and they may not tell us about that. And the interest rates on those are just, they're crazy, and it might completely blow up the ability to settle.
Yeah, right. Costs are important. Costs are a big thing, man. You cannot overlook, at least have a good idea. If you have a good CFO that can run numbers for you very quickly, how important is a good CFO that can run numbers for you very quickly?
I'm going to say it's probably like the top one things to successful mediation.
Good CFOs that can make a good Paloma.
Good Paloma, run a great Excel spreadsheet. All very important.
Very good
things.
At fantasy baseball.
You know, as a former...
Like trifecta.
Yeah. As a former defense lawyer, and I don't know if, Jenny, if this has been your experience too, I think the defense a lot of times overestimates how much we can shave off of those bills.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I think defense lawyers are like, you know, $300,000 in bills, they'll be able to get that for $100,000. That's not the case. Yeah, I mean, we are not cutting those bills by nearly as much. Yeah, we'll get a little help, but we are not cutting those bills by nearly as much as they think we are. Another thing before I forget that I think is a good tip for any younger lawyers that are listening. I've been a big fan over the last few years, especially on bigger cases where you have a life care plan or voc rehab plan with big futures. I will cut a deal with the defense that I'll provide them with those reports, because I think carriers like to actually see the report versus just getting the numbers from plaintiff's counsel. I will provide those reports, and even that's even disclosing my experts early under the settlement privilege. If they agree that those are drafts, they can never be used in litigation. They can't question my expert about any later revisions that might be made, because we're getting them done quickly for the purpose of mediation. Yeah. So you can see what our damages are.
That's expert level stuff right there.
One tip I want to give people is, on all of your cases, you don't need a life care plan. You don't need all of these bells and whistles when you go to mediation. You're just spending money. When most people know what a cervical fusion in the future costs, most attorneys, most mediators know what the reasonable value of a disc replacement surgery is. So you don't need to go out and pay a billing expert to put together this crazy life care plan when it's like, okay, we're debating they're ever going to get that future surgery. But if they do, they kind of know the market value of that. You don't need to prove that and pay someone to do that.
I'm talking about bigger cases.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For those big cases, they need to see an economic loss of someone that can't work, like really the justification for that, or a weird injury that someone doesn't understand that's a little bit different, like someone that lost a limb. Like that's
amputation cases, what I had in mind. Yeah,
where you don't know, like most adjusters or attorneys, like I don't know what that person's lifetime is going to look like. We don't run against those cases all the time. So for those types of cases, you do. But for the run-of-the-mill, you know, back injury or orthopedic injury, most people know the value of those cases. And unless you're on the precipice of trial, don't be wasting your money.
Good stuff.
Yeah, another thing is if there is a future recommendation, don't just go into the mediation assuming that, oh, they had a lumbar fusion. They're going to know that I'm going to be claiming a second one. Like, make sure that if you're going to have a future recommendation, make sure that your doctor has already issued a report. It's in, or you've identified it in discovery so that they have some sort of heads up. You know, you shouldn't be going in there dropping any sort of surprises in mediation. Unless you're really playing a long game in the end, if you're really looking to settle the case, you should have everything kind of, for the most part, the stuff that is good for you, laid out in advance, right?
I agree.
So, I got a little Family Feud action. Wait a minute.
That was my subtle excitement.
So we got he's
just loopy
today. Yeah.
The only thing he's got in his stomach is tequila. What's in there? Tequila.
We got some. Like I said, we got important vitamins and minerals. We got some agave, grapefruit. He's good to go. All
right.
How hard would it be to reload this?
You're talking to an expert CFO tender.
Hey, bartender, Joe Boo needs a refill.
A second breakfast. I like it.
All right, so we're going to play the feud. We got Sevi and Conger. What are we going to call you guys? We haven't done that.
Are we a team?
Yeah, you guys are a team.
Oh, we're a team.
Yeah.
I'll defer to Mr. Creative.
Songer.
Songer. We got Team Songer and Brenny.
Brenny.
Brenny. Okay.
Brenny. Brenny's a...
All right, I want to know the biggest mistakes that you can make in mediation. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. No particular order. No particular order.
Bing.
We'll let the girls go first.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not how Family Feuds play, but okay.
Can I have an answer?
We got one. Jenny's got it.
All right. This has to be on there, and if not, your list is wrong. Increasing your demand from the prior demand with no justification.
Not in those exact words, but yes. That's on there. Okay. I don't have it in any particular order, but it's on there.
And how often do we come into a case where the attorney who referred us the case expectation is that the demand is going to go up, and that just puts us in...
It's the worst, yeah.
I would rather just stand on the current demand than go the other way to try to get back.
Yeah. I totally agree.
I kind of like it.
I mean, that can be justified, like, if there was a substantial change in the landscape. Like, they got the surgery. Otherwise, if it's the same...
How about this change of the landscape? Sebby Fisher came on board.
Uh-oh.
I don't
decrease it by half.
Waiver of costs.
It's coming at you.
I just think politically that's ugly. Because now you're saying, you know, how does the defense lawyer justify that? Like, well, the guys before, I was a little bit better than them, but this guy's a lot better than me. So now now the number's gone up.
Read the question again.
The biggest mistakes that you can make at mediation as an attorney.
What do you think?
Doing secret deals at the bathroom?
I think dropping in new bombshells during the mediation that weren't otherwise disclosed.
Yeah, I'd say sandbagging good evidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not what he said.
That's exactly what I said, Sevi.
I think that's what he said.
God, this is why we don't let you go to mediations.
I know.
Yeah, if you got a future...
If I don't have to sit there when the air conditioner turns off, I'm fine with that.
If you get something that's going to help your case, I mean, it's not going to do anyone any favors to drop that mid-mediation. Actually, it's going to piss them off. Can I get another answer?
What's the midpoint of the new demands?
Stop.
Knowing what your client is expecting in mediation.
Not knowing your client's goal number going in. Yeah. So, Ryan, how do you... there's different strokes for different folks. I mean, it depends on the client, but how do you usually figure out, you know, what your client wants? How do you nuance that? Some clients are easy, you know. Do you have any expectations? No. Okay, great. I'll be see you in 2 hours. How often does that happen?
That is one of the trickiest things about, I think, being a plaintiff's attorney all around, is just really understand, because your clients are a lot of times negotiating with you, too. I mean, they'll tell you...
Poor explanation.
I got buzzed on that one. Yeah. I think that's just on a case by case basis. I think you just got to know your client.
What's the dream client?
Well, the dream client is somebody who just says, listen, you know, just do the best you can for me. I trust you.
Yeah. I just get whatever you can get at the end of the day and tell me what it means, and I'll heed your advice.
And this isn't bullshit. This isn't a sales pitch. I swear with those clients, I end up getting the most
the best results with those plants because they just let me kind of
let you do your thing.
My I have creative freedom and I can just do my thing.
Finally, I'm an architect and I can build.
Exactly.
It really is true.
All right, so we got a couple more. I think three more left.
Three more.
Oh right. God, I got one.
Okay, go.
Basically, like, you don't want to leave money on the table. Quitting early, storming out.
Yeah, I said taking offense to early numbers, cutting it short.
Yep. Yeah, you see a lot of people make that mistake. But like I said earlier, some adjusters just like to do the dance, and they want to start really low, and they want to go back and forth because they're enjoying their day. Yeah. Like, this is their day out of the cage, and they came out. They're free for the day, and they get to go fly back tomorrow to wherever they're coming from. But, hey, they're in L.A., baby. They want to be – make their
Yeah, I'll match your $10,000 moves.
Yeah, Ryan's the king of that.
I have an analogy I always use to explain that to clients. I always go, pretend this is like we went out to play a little tennis, and the first offer by them is that's just like their initial warm up volley. Right. Don't be offended by it. It's not their best shot. If they came out and slammed one on you, then they'd be weird.
Yeah, 15 love.
Just the beginning of a little volley, a little back and forth. Like, don't hit it too hard the first time.
I'm going to take a stab at another one and just not knowing the economics of your client or missing information about your client's case that is a surprise later. Like, oh, we didn't have that surgery center bill, and I guess you're not netting 100, you're netting zero.
Yeah. I kind of put that in there with, you know, not – disclosing evidence mid mediation, not bringing them before.
Okay, he's giving it to me.
No, he did not give it to you.
What?
Let them play. Come on.
Okay, yeah, you guys. Ryan, mercy, pity.
Can you see the sheet?
What's his name? Oh, no. That's one of my tips. Like he said, see the sheet. When the mediator comes in, take your phone.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
take a photo of his little notes. Yeah,
and they always have secret notes. You got to try to find their secret notes.
Yeah, cut that out.
What about like overpromising?
That's a good one. Will it be on the list?
Yeah, story of your life. But let's see if it's on the list.
Yeah, I kind of group that in with, you know, not knowing your client's number. That whole discussion of what is the case worth and all that.
How about choosing the wrong mediator?
It's a mistake, but I mean,
tough list.
A couple more. No, you got like four in a row.
How about not? Well, this was probably already answered.
Negotiating in front of the clients.
Yeah.
I mean, it all goes back to the whole trust thing, right? I mean, you don't want those clients to get offended by those early offers.
You
want to
be in the circle of trust or outside of it, Fokker?
It's true. I like when the mediator pulls you outside early on when he has an explanation for why the defense is offering what they offer. And I always tell the client, just we're going to go out in the hall. Don't take any offense. You don't want to hear yourself talked about like a used car.
Yeah,
exactly. It's a buffer, and yeah. I'm gonna sanitize things before I tell you. I'll make sure you're, you know, in on everything. But
because the reality is, you're throwing out a number to start with on your side that's way offensive. Well, not way of not to.
Well, that's one of the things we're going to let the listeners know. If you're going to go to mediation and your number is just crazy offensive, you're going to get a crazy offensive response, and then you're going to sit there all day. But if you know that case lands in six figures, just start in six figures. I mean, unless there's an insurance, but like unless there's $1 million policy that's questionably open and you're twisting that screw. But if there's a $5 million of coverage. And it, you know that lands somewhere in six figures. Don't be starting at $2 million. They're going to start at $20,000, and you're going to just. Everyone knows you'll get a lot more traction getting to closer to that sweet spot where it's going to end up.
The word from some of the higher level mediators and adjusters on the street right now is that plaintiffs' counsel generally has just gotten way out of hand with opening demands, and so I've actually recently sort of lowered my initial demands, and I've had really good luck with it.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Now you brought it up. I mean, how do you pick that? Because an opening demand is very important. I mean, it's going to dictate how it's going to go. I mean,
because we make the first move generally. Yeah. Like usually the plaintiff makes the first move, and so you're setting the tone.
I think it's important if you're going to start with a more reasonable opening demand that everybody understand that that's what you're doing. You got to tell the other side, okay. you may be used to everybody coming in here asking 4, 5, 6 times what they want. That's not what I'm doing. So if you don't want the big, crazy first demand, then you got to respond in kind.
I agree completely.
I go a lot faster. Like, you know, this lands at 500. Don't start at 970. Then they're like, oh, okay, we're at 125. Okay, we're at 850. And then you're done in 3 hours, as opposed to we're at 2 million, we're at 20 grand. And it's, you're just looking at each other through lunch, and it's kind of like, it's a delicious lunch. I mean, I'm not going to knock that. It's usually amazing.
I got a question, Jenny. So, I mean, going back to kind of doing prep work before mediation, obviously it's important to know the facts of your case, at least for the most part. Are you delegating people to do your mediation briefs, or are you doing your own mediation briefs?
Okay, so there's not a single mediation brief on one of my cases where I don't have input on it. But do I write every medical summary? No, because I find
that
really...
Yeah, she does. I've seen her.
Okay, I do a lot of the time. Not every time.
Because I do.
Sometimes I delegate.
The reason I ask is because I do all my mediation briefs, and it helps me know like what all the facts are.
I mean, I don't do 100% of the brief, but I'm pretty involved in my briefs. I don't know. It just helps me be more prepared.
Sevi's very involved with this.
I hate writing briefs.
Wrote his wife a love letter once. Yeah. That was it.
You know what, though?
I get through, like, one sentence, and I'm like, I should change that sentence.
Speaking of mediation briefs and Sevi, I've made a practice of this on bigger cases, and I think it's great, but Sevi's the one that got me on it to begin with. I do PowerPoints now. Like, PowerPoints? Yeah, instead of a brief, I'll do a one-page letter that just kind of lays out the important information.
We all know why we're here. That sort of thing.
It's like a no. It's big hitters. It's a closing.
It's a closing PowerPoint. Like it's almost an opening and closing PowerPoint. Right.
Sounds
kind of
lazy.
Education and argument. No, it's actually
cool.
It's effective. We sent it to defense like a week before the mediation. It's settled 3 days before the mediation even happened.
Yeah, and I've done it on a few more, but it works a lot better on a big one. I mean, you can't really make a sexy PowerPoint on a discectomy.
And just make sure your last page is always like what we will be asking a jury for, 30 million.
Right.
All right, so let's get a little bit more in depth into negotiation tactics. I mean, what are you making jumps? Many making big jumps, small jumps? Is there kind of is a feeling out process, I'm sure, that's not it's not a formula, it's kind of a feel it out sort of deal.
But I've got the rule of 4. It's like the HBO shows, you know. There's so much character development. You don't know if you're really going to like the show until about the 4th or 5th episode. That's how mediation is. I think you don't really see a pattern until about 4. Each side has made about 4 moves.
I think 3 or 4. I tell the client, like, we don't know what's going on until we're 3 to 4 moves in. Then I can tell you probably how much money they got. But right now, you're feeling each other out to see what does everyone really think about this case.
And when do you do small jumps?
When they do small jumps.
You have to encourage good behavior and discourage bad behavior.
You know, I'm kind of in Brad's boat. I after the first 2 moves and it's just like a little pissing match back and forth, you kind of say, okay, look, I mean, we all know where this should be. I'm going to make a big jump here, but if you're not at XYZ, we're done. Like, if you don't at least come here, we're done. Like, we're not getting anywhere.
I'm so the opposite.
When you throw that out there, when you try to make a bracket, or if I'm here, you got to be there, you guys got to expect they're never going to do that. They're never going to agree to your number.
Well,
what's their response when you throw out? First of all, not everyone's familiar with brackets. What's a bracket?
All right, so brackets, I do love doing brackets, but you shouldn't do those for the first 3 moves, probably 4 moves in. You do a bracket. Because then you should be getting a little closer, or maybe you're not, but then you get frustrated and you say, okay, if you think this case is going to settle, you think it should settle for 500 grand, you say, all right, my bracket, you know, if you guys come up to 400, we'll be at 750. And you know that they are not going to accept that bracket, but what are they going to do? They're either going to give you a hard number back as a response, or they're going to come up with their bracket, and their bracket's going to say, we'll come up to 250 at your 500. And then you got, Brian, what are you doing when they do that? What goes into your mind?
It's like that gif of Zach Galifianakis in The Hangover with all those like formulas going around.
You watch the midpoint of the midpoints.
Yeah, so what's my midpoint and what's their midpoint? And then the mediator comes back with their bracket, and here's what you say. You go, okay, well, my midpoint was 675 and their midpoint was 300. So the real negotiation is between 675 and 300. So assuming that that's correct, and I'm pretty sure it is, I'm at 600. What's your next move? And then they should be like, okay, you got me. We're at 400, and then it settles at 500 where it should have landed. But you're gaining information because if their bracket, if their top of their bracket isn't where you needed that to land, that case probably won't even settle. So you might be wasting your time trying to get there.
But the point of that is you can't watch your own midpoint. You got to watch the midpoint of the midpoint.
This is expert level.
Well, I mean, it's just math at the end of the day. If they're showing a midpoint of 200, they're at 100, 300, and you're showing a midpoint of, you know, 600 at, I don't know what the numbers
are.
Yeah, 5 and 7. Then the midpoint of the midpoints, I lost track of what I was saying.
So you're at the midpoint of the midpoints is 6 and 3. It'd be like 450?
I think I said it was yes, 2, 6 and 2, 400, whatever. It'd be the midpoint
of the
midpoints.
Shoulder scope?
I'm good with calculations.
Seb, you brought up a good point earlier that I didn't have in my outline, but even if you don't, you think there's no chance the case is going to settle, it's still good to go to mediation, right?
Yeah. I can think of two sort of glaring reasons. One, to learn information about the other side's case. And two, I think it's a good idea to go to mediations on an open policy case because I think you can get a really good insight into how screwed the defense thinks they are.
Yeah. That's a whole nother session, an open policy mediation, because you'd never settle at that first mediation. How many times you settle at a first mediation on an over policy settlement case?
Did one last year.
Twice.
No, you didn't, Sevy. Oh, he did. Wait, yes, he. Oh, yeah.
It's a big one.
I think we all remember that one. 50K on a 25 policy.
10.5 quadruplets.
What Sevy's saying is true. Like if we have a case that we'd like for trial. When you say like for trial, just the defense is holding on to some liability dispute that's crazy, and it's an A-plus client, like that case probably should get tried, and you go to get information. Like, what do they really think about their case? What are they going to tell you their expert says? You kind of know what you're going into for expert discovery.
Have you ever declined an invitation to mediate? I mean, rarely,
no.
Right? Yeah, sure, we'll go. It's not going to settle, but we can go. We'll talk about the case.
I'm actually curious what you guys all think about this one. This reminded me of something. I hear this a lot. I hear folks call me and ask for advice on getting a case resolved, and they'll say, well, we're only going to go to mediation. I told them we're only going to go to mediation if they pay for it, or we're only going to go to mediation if they start above a certain number. I'm just not that big of a – well, first of all, starting with the if they pay for it thing.
That's stupid.
I think that screams cheap.
Yeah, like that's a little pathetic.
We're talking about a case we're trying to settle. I've got a $3 million demand, and I'm not willing to throw $3,000 or $4,000 at a mediation to see what you've got. I just don't think that's a good look.
It's a bad look.
I've done it at the end of a mediation just because I'm pissed. You know, like,
don't do it again.
You're not going to go? All right, fine, but you're paying for it. We've already paid for it at that point anyway.
And then the whole thing about, you know, you got to start at this floor. I guess there's probably some circumstances where that is a good move, but I think they're very, very rare.
Yeah.
You're dealing with a company. They've got policies and protocols. They're coming to try to feel you out. I just don't think that's a great move. I think it can kind of turn the other side off a little bit.
I agree. I hate doing it, but sometimes you have to. For example, like if it might be a second mediation, or there could be 998s out there or something like that. And I think in that case, you kind of owe a duty to tell the other side, look, I want to be transparent with you. I don't want to waste your time. I just want you to know that last demand, that line in the sand really was the line in the sand. We're not using that as our starting point.
I think that's great. Do it in a soft way where you say, listen, you should understand before we go to this that this case never settles for less than you know where we were before. But don't say, I won't go unless your first number is this. Let them do it their way.
I agree. I don't like that.
Yeah.
To each his own. To each his own.
You disagree?
Yeah, disagree.
You're wrong.
It might be. How do you feel about mediators' proposals? Ryan's got a real...
I'm trying to decide whether I want to share this or not.
No, never mind. No, actually don't. Yeah, you're good. He doesn't like them, but...
I really like mediators.
I like them too. Exciting.
Everyone knows.
Waiting for that 4 o'clock email from the mediator on Friday.
But
the problem is...
See you Monday.
We'll keep some things, you know.
I don't like when there's a mediator's proposal and then someone's asking for more time and then...
Yeah.
it's like, man, do I even give them more time than they know that we're probably accepting? And that's I just don't like that move from the defense. It's kind of like, I don't like it.
How about this? How much do you actually believe what the mediator's telling you?
Not much.
Never?
No. Even the ones I love, I
really?
Know they're...
Yeah. There's maybe a couple that I always like.
I think most of them
I always question it.
They're salesmen. But they're just selling.
Mediation, this is what a lot of people, they go to mediation and they're like, I'm going to get full value of my case. And it's like, you go to mediation and usually the feel, this is what I tell a lot of clients, when you settle a case at mediation, usually you're settling, which means you're not high-fiving and you're not sad. You're just
okay.
It's like a double.
It's like you walk out of there thinking, all right, that's the feeling of mediation is, I guess so.
It's like I got a double, but I got thrown out going to third. So I right. get.
There's a mediator who says that you, generally when people settle at mediation, both parties leave unhappy to a certain extent.
I've heard that.
Content.
But it's not entirely true. But
so that's like for the younger attorneys going to mediation, just don't expect that your demand's going to get paid. Don't expect that the insurance limits are going to be tendered. They're there to talk and listen to what they have to say because they may have things about your client that your client hasn't told you or forgot. And so that might help you value the case. And then you also get an idea of who your client is. Sometimes we're meeting clients for the second or third time, and that's it at mediation. And then you're like, this person I can tell has been lying to me. And so then you need to try to get rid of that case for their own benefit. But then you need to educate them like, man, you're going to go to trial. You're going to get negative money.
Yeah, I showed up at a mediation. I think it was the first time. Bob had met the client. I hadn't met the client yet, and it was a million policy. And I said, you know what? I'm not even moving off the policy. This guy's the best.
Yeah.
So pay it or don't. I don't care.
So when you say, do you believe the mediator or not, a lot of times the mediator is just delivering a message from the other side or a strategy from the other side. And I like to always stay optimistic at mediation because I've had so many times where the message was, we're never going to get past this number. And then we end up getting three times that number. So
I didn't get you 200.
Yeah,
I got you 300.
There's one in particular that loves that line.
I like to stick with the process because I think that, you know, a lot of times certain adjusters will have a strategy of coming in and trying to steal the case for a certain number. And, you know, you act like you're leaving and they chase you out like at a car dealership.
I think we're getting close on time here. So I just want to address a few things kind of when you're resolved, when you're at mediation, you agree on a number and you're resolving the case, some issues that you need to watch out for when you're resolving. Jenny brought up a good point to me before we got in here, liquidated damages clauses. So Jenny, tell us kind of the risks of that if those pop up in mediation and what you need to be aware of.
Well, I guess I've been thinking about it more recently just because it has been coming up more often in my cases. And basically, like, you just need to know that those confidentiality clauses, they may seem innocuous. Like, okay, well, don't say anything about this to anybody. Okay, I won't. But it goes beyond that. There could be tax implications if there's a confidentiality clause. And you need to explain that to your client. Sometimes people will just throw it in there without clearing it first.
Always.
You settle at mediation, and then 2 weeks later you get the release, and suddenly there's a confidentiality provision. And if you're like Sevi, you just email back and say, sorry, no deal. We never discussed this.
And you know
this.
What they do? They take it
they
out.
Take it they out.
Do. I always tell them there needs to be separate consideration because of my favorite basketball player ever, the Worm, Dennis the Worm. Rodman.
It was a great case where
Dennis Rodman kicking a guy in the
tax implications. Yeah. Dennis Rodman just booted a cameraman or someone on the sidelines right in the crotch. And they had some confidential settlement, and the confidential settlement was for a lot of money. And the IRS came back and looked at that and said, wait a minute, that amount of money, the significant portion of that was for confidentiality. So you didn't say anything. You weren't hurt that bad. So they were going to tax them on that amount. Right. So if you bake in a confidentiality agreement, you need to have some consideration that's reasonable. And it could be $100, it could be $200, but parse out the settlement. Hey, like $999,000 of this is for your injury. And $100 is for your confidentiality, and put that in there so it's enforceable. And so when the tax time comes around, you can show your accountant like, "Hey, I'm claiming $100 and not a million."
Right.
Or make it mutual, so you know you're not going to tell anybody about settlement with me. I'm not going to tell anybody about settlement with you. Then you have mutual consideration.
What I find though is a lot of times, you know, a lot of people don't know about that, like the specific case or why consideration. You know, so oftentimes if you just when they just try to throw it in there without even agreeing to it, and you send that email back, you know, counsel, as you know. You know, there needs to be separate consideration for this. We charge $200,000 for confidentiality. If you'd like to pay it, we're happy to sign this document, but otherwise take it out.
By the way, I love that his favorite basketball player is Dennis Rodman.
of course.
Great negotiator with North Korea.
He's the best.
Oh, yeah.
In that same vein, I think
he's better than Hillary.
Another thing that young lawyers should be aware of is if your client is on, which a lot of ours are, if your client has government benefits like Medi-Cal or something like that, you need to be aware of that. There's certain government benefits that they take away if you have too much money in your bank account.
I think it's more than like $2,000 you lose your government.
Yeah, I think we talked about that in our
Tracy Cass.
Tracy Cass's episode, if you want to watch that.
So we can link up that one we have with Tracy.
Yeah, always great to take somebody like that with you to mediation too, because they know how those benefits work and can give that advice.
And it's not just on big cases. Sometimes it's the most important on smaller cases. If you get a client a huge settlement, maybe he doesn't care or need Medi-Cal anymore. But if you get a client a medium settlement, that could be super important that they still have health benefits.
So a couple more things, and we got to wrap up. So the case is resolved. You're at mediation. Brad, how important is it to get something in writing from the client saying, you know, this is, I'm agreeing to settle for this amount based on the premise that I'll at least get, you know, this XYZ is my bottom floor?
That's critical because we've had a lot of cases where, you know, you'll find out after you settle the case, the client suddenly wants more money, or maybe they are second guessing the settlement. And well, I never agreed to only $100,000 in my pocket. We settled for $500. I want $250,000. So at mediation, you need to say, show them what the costs are and what their medical bills are, and say, we can get your medical bills down some, but we can at least guarantee you X amount, and put that in there and have them sign off it or acknowledge it somehow. Because they are going to ask for more. They're going to say, well, your attorney's fees shouldn't be more than my settlement. And usually at our firm, we don't let that happen. But sometimes we're taking the case through trial, or like we settle after a trial when they're questioning how much they get. You need to have something in writing. And there is a new law, but before you go to mediation, you have to let the client know in writing, and they need to sign off that they're acknowledging that they're going to mediation. And that was put in effect last year that a lot of firms aren't doing, but you need to.
I mean, even if it's a text message between you and the client saying, hey, you're good with this number, you get this, and they say yes. I mean, that's even though the nicest, almost well-intentioned clients, sometimes when in the end they'll say, whoa, and where did this come from? This isn't what we talked about. So
we could do a whole another podcast on setting expectations.
We're going to wrap up this episode. Any parting words of wisdom to any of our mediation specialists here about anything we talked about today before we sign off?
I've got something. I think be patient. I'm a very patient negotiator.
I'm very impatient.
That's why I don't go to mediations.
Yeah, you just got to give it time. I don't like the dance either, but don't leave money on the table. Be patient, and don't storm out too soon.
Agreed.
I will heed that advice.
I think agree to mediation, even if you think it's a waste of time. You can learn about your case. You can learn about your client. And who knows, the case may settle for more than what you thought it was going to be.
Think about the mentality from the other side. Don't just think about your mentality and your client's mentality. The other side is a corporation. They're a business. They've got a lot of checks and balances, whereas we're so much more nimble. So don't get frustrated and give up too soon.
Sevi?
I would personally like to just change the mediation environment a little bit. I would like to go elsewhere, maybe a golf course, maybe the beach.
Maybe a living room.
I think it's...
There you go.
You know, I think... I don't know. I'd like some alternative options.
I'd say one thing for me that
a sipping room? A living room with a sipping room.
A little Sonos on in the background?
Yeah, exactly. One thing we didn't spend too much time on that I wish we did is managing expectations or... trying to put, it's difficult kind of mediating sometimes with clients that really don't understand that it's not necessarily what you think you deserve or what is fair. It's a matter of what a jury would actually conceivably give you. And it's hard to conceptualize for a lot of people. It's hard to conceptualize for us, and we do it for a living. So you need to be able to kind of have a good relationship with your client and be able to describe it to them and put it into context for them. You know, I like to usually put it into context of imagine this is a market for goods, and you're a damaged computer, or how much was your computer worth? It's only worth what somebody's willing to pay for it, as weird as it sounds. So don't walk away from this and get screwed at trial because you think you deserve more. It's not what you think you deserve. It's what these strangers think that you deserve.
Depends on judge, jury, jurisdiction, client.
And then you can have Michael Moorhead come in and give the fear of God speech at the call of service.
Well, I tell them a lot of times, you know, you're at a little bit of a disadvantage because on that side, they have the client, then they have the lawyer,
And then they have a professional adjuster who's trying to watch all of it and determine the value. In our situation, you have me, I'm your lawyer, and I'll sort of also act as the evaluator of the case, but you kind of have to act as your own, you know, the own CEO of your own case and take a step back and look at the market value, like Brandon said, the market value of your case, in addition to what it subjectively means to
it's
you.
It's the business decision of your life about your life.
Yeah.
Some yeah, clients are better at that than others.
Yeah, make sure they don't listen to the family members or anyone else in the room other than you.
Right.
So we could probably spend another 30 minutes on this, but we got to sign off. So thank you for listening. And Sevi, what do we say?
No sleep till justice.
That's right.
That's right. If you have any questions, media@justiceteam.com. Take us out, Timmy.
Or call Jenny.
Please don't.
Alexa, play mediation playlist.
You're gonna get like 50 bucks.
So you'll understand. You've got 30 days and not a minute more. Hope you blow the chance, cause I wanna be a policy opener.